Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, May 9th, 2023. A little delayed satisfaction there. A little wrong camera cut there. Of course, I am Tim Geddes and I am joined by, for the very first time on the show, Lucy James.
Very first time with you.
With me.
I was like, I was here maybe 6 days ago.
Which I'm very excited about. Yeah. But I am joined for the first time with you, which I'm very excited about because I was robbed last week. Yeah. I specifically asked to do the show with you. And then Greg was like, no. You're going to LA. Lucy will have to wait.
Play
but here we are.
Game.
Exactly.
Some would say this is the superior pairing.
That's what I'm thinking. We have to prove it during the show that you think we're going to up to the task?
Easy.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How you doing?
Really good. You know, you've been out there doing a lot of things, a lot of cool stuff.
I know.
GameSpot right now, whole new slate of content.
Yes.
You wrote a comic book.
I did.
Want to talk about that for a sec?
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad because this is exactly what I did last time. I'm sorry.
You're here again, man. I'm asking.
No, thank you. I mean, yeah, it's weird because also I'm very British and I'm really bad at self-promotion and I'm fed up of my own face right now. But no, I mean, GameSpot stuff, we have a whole slate of new programming. We had the first week go up last week, which went down really well. Thank you to everyone at home. If you watched, tuned in, did anything, like shared it.
I watched really the Kurt Locker. It was great.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad we've got Kurt, like his own regular show because he is such talent. Today's episode is all about the in defense of the 6 out of 10.
Ooh,
which is,
ooh.
I love a good few games that are the classic epitome of the 6 out of 10.
We've been here, like, the swimming in sevens. Michael Huber's always talking about. We're fans of that. But, damn, y'all are going down to the sixes. I respect that.
Yeah, because sometimes it's not enough to be a seven.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have, like, all these
you're
new
a six sicko. What we're going to call you.
I'm gonna read it right now, and we'll give you 10%.
Thank you.
So we have all these shows launched, and, you know, Tam and I have Spot On, which people seem to react really well to.
Perfect name.
Thank you. And yeah, and then I wrote a comic book, and everything just seemed to coalesce and come out in the same week.
It's a great week. Fantastic week. Where can people get the book?
It's available now on... Hello. Even closer, I'm sorry.
Gotta love. Big dog.
It doesn't help that I have the longest neck.
I think it does, though. You can get close.
Yeah, but then I'd have to, like, lean down like a giraffe at a watering hole.
What a great energy already, everybody. It's Tuesday. But yeah, where can people get the comic?
It's available on Kindle right now. It's going to be in stores May 10th. Octobriana and the Underground, Full Tilt Boogie Part 1. And then Tam's story is in Part 2, which is coming out in a couple months.
Hell yes. Well, everybody, go support that and go check that out. But know that right now you are here on Games Daily, where we're about to talk about no new Switch hardware this year, Starfield's M rating, and more. Of course, this happens every single weekday live at 10 a.m. on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames and youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. If you want to get it as a podcast, you can search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Games Daily, and we will be right there for you. You can correct us when we get stuff wrong live during the show by going to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. If you don't want to watch live, you could still be part of the show by going to kindoffunny.com/KFGD to write in your questions and comments and all of that stuff. If you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, where you can get the show ad-free and a whole bevy of bonus content, a whole bunch of great shows like Kind of Feudy, Remember Blank. It's a great time for everybody. If you haven't watched those shows, I highly recommend you go over to Patreon and check them out. But if you don't have any bucks to toss our way over on Patreon, that is okay. When you're buying games on the Epic Game Store, use our Epic code KINDOFFUNNY, and at no extra cost to you, we get some money. It's great. Everybody wins, especially us. It's fantastic. To be part of the show, head to kindoffunny.com/KFGD to write in all your stuff. A little housekeeping for you, Lucy.
Ooh.
A new Kind of Funny podcast is up, where we talk about a mistake that changed my life forever.
In a good way or a bad way?
Very horrible way. Oh. Very terrible. Very terrible. You're going to have to go check out youtube.com/kindoffunny for that one. And then after this, we're trying something new, where we're doing a little post show, a little 30-minute breakdown, where we hang out with Andy Cortez or Mike Coward. I'm not sure exactly who's coming out today, but it's going to be a great time. We'll answer your super chats. You can go over on YouTube, super chat about questions and news stories from this show or any video game stuff you want to ask. Or since we got Lucy, any questions you have for Lucy James. Over on Patreon, the newest episode of the Shit List is up with us breaking down the top 10 best Zelda games. It's a great episode. And thank you to our Patreon producer, Delaney Twining. Today, we're brought to you by Shady Rays, but I will tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have four stories today.
A baker's dozen!
Kevin Coelho was behind this camera over here adjusting, heard me go into the intro and ran his ass back.
I
made it just in time. What is it like for you to be around Kevin?
I love Kevin.
It's special, right?
You know what? He just has such an energy that I love and appreciate. And it's just, you know, also last time I was here, Mike was over there stretching out the leg. It's such a great vibe in here.
Kind of funny, baby. Let's start with story number one. Nintendo reports Switch sales slow down and suggests no new hardware this year. This comes from Andy Robinson at VGC. Nintendo has reported a slowdown in Switch hardware sales and suggested that no new hardware will release before April 2024. The company's now sold 125.62 million Switch consoles as of March 31st, up from the 122.5 million, but year-end console sales have declined by 22%. In its results for the end of its fiscal year, Nintendo confirmed it had sold a total of 17.97 consoles during the 12-month period, which means it's missed its year start sales target of 21 million and later revised target of 18 million, coming in just shy of that one. The company forecasts it will sell 15 million consoles during the current fiscal year ending March 31st, 2024, which represents a further 16.5% decline as Switch enters a significant slowdown during its seventh year on the market. Speaking on a call after the results, Nintendo president reported that, he reportedly suggested that amid slowing console sales, Nintendo isn't completely confident in hitting its next 15 million target. According to Bloomberg, Furukawa added that no new or upgraded hardware is factored into Nintendo's annual forecast. Sustaining the Switch's sales momentum will be difficult in its seventh year. Our goal of selling 15 million units this fiscal year is a bit of a stretch, but we will do our best to bolster demand going into the holiday season so that we can achieve that goal. It's also been reported that development of new Nintendo hardware is progressing well. That's according to Nikkei Asia short source, who the publication claims is close to the platform holder. Development seems to be progressing well, they said, but a product launch won't happen before next spring at the earliest. I'm going to stop there before we get into all the software sales stuff. Any of this surprise you? Any takeaways?
No, but then this is the GTA 5 thing, where at this point, who doesn't have a copy of GTA 5? And at this point, who doesn't have a Switch who wants a Switch? Especially with, you know, it's 7 years. And it's a pretty reasonably priced console. A lot of incredible games on there, especially if you're a Nintendo fan. I think, yeah, it's just going to continue to slow down. Especially because right now the conversation around Switch as hardware is, it is old. It is
7 years old.
7 years old. At this point, it's a couple generations behind, power-wise, battery-wise. Yeah, it's got the little OLED refresh, which is lovely. And you can get the Zelda OLED and all of the special edition ones, whatever. But it's not a shiny new piece of kit anymore.
Exactly. And I think there, we always talk about how Nintendo has the unique factor to them of the family side of things. And especially with how Nintendo consoles, especially now with the Switch, is both a handheld and a house device, that multiple members of the house end up wanting one. And I feel like that is the perfect use case for the Switch Lite coming out of Switch OLED, where some of the more potentially mature players will be like, oh, I'll buy the new OLED and I'll give my old one to the little brother or whatever it is, or I'm going to buy this light so the kid can play on the couch or whatever it is. So I feel like there's a lot of good reasons, and especially with the amount of multiplayer games that are fun with one Switch, but also the ones that are fun with multiple Switches. So I feel like they're potentially even tapping out of that audience at this point so late in the game.
Oh, yeah. And at the same time, I think one thing with multiple Switch in a family thing, Nintendo still has not figured out, you know, sharing.
Yeah,
you know, basic all the stuff with
basic family stuff.
Yeah, but you know, they are kind of doing more to add things to Nintendo Switch Online, making sure that more games are available on that service. So the thing is, as well, is that this story, if you look at it, oh, doom and gloom for Nintendo because they're not going to hit those sales targets. they're going to be fine. Yeah. They have a little thing called Zelda coming out on Friday. And all of this is going to be bolstered by software sales anyway.
Yeah, you know, listening to the words that the president over there is actually saying, I think it really paints a picture of where we're at in the Switch's life cycle, and specifically this year. Like, we're about to get a Zelda game, like the follow-up to the highest selling Zelda ever, right? So I imagine that the attach rate is going to be astronomical for this game for Switch players out there. I mean, you see the excitement, you see the amount of views that any piece of Zelda content gets these days across the board. It's like, yeah, there's a fervor for this one. And everybody that bought Breath of the Wild when the Switch launched is probably going to be buying this game, or at least excited for it. But then the question becomes, what is next? Like, what is the rest of the year? We're kind of looking at a fairly barren summer and fall and winter, like for Zelda on, essentially, for Nintendo at this point. And the messaging here, they said they have some stuff to help bolster, but I'm really getting the idea here that, like, we might actually really be gearing up for a new console launch. And they're like, hey, just setting expectations here. We're still going to kick ass, but, like, we're gearing up for the next big thing.
Because I'm trying to think, when does Nintendo do its big directs? Is it February, September?
It always changes this a little. But I would say, yeah, there's always one in January, February. Not always, but there's usually one January, February, and then one around September.
Because if that September one is, you know, you've had your Zelda, leave us alone, we finally released it, and then it's September time, it's talking about stuff for the rest of the year, and then, hey, just one more thing, bang, Switch 2.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, is at any moment, they can just release a new Mario game. And with Mario like in the biggest moment of his career at this point with the movie and with the theme park and all that stuff, I'm very shocked that we haven't had a new Mario. On the 2D or 3D, any side in a while, we had Bowser's Fury as this, like, not even a standalone. It was kind of just like an additional piece to 3D World that was a great, but not as sizable as a full adventure. It was almost more like a DLC pack, right?
Yeah, 100%. But also, I can't believe, thinking back, that they released Legend of Zelda and Super Mario and Odyssey at the same time.
Yeah.
Same year.
Yeah. And I mean, we haven't had a new 2D Mario on the Switch.
God, they're right.
That's because there's Super Mario Maker 2, and then there was a new Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe or whatever. So just the ports, but we haven't had an actual new 2D Mario platformer since 2012 when the Wii U launched.
Set him free, Nintendo.
Figure
Set
it
him
out.
Free.
That's how you get them console sales, baby. But it's wild to think here. So now with the updated numbers, so the Switch hardware sales at 125 million puts it third place. Which already had hit recently in terms of the overall console sales, because it outpaced the Game Boy and Game Boy Color. There's only two above it now. Do you know what they are?
Consoles?
Yeah.
I would say PlayStation 4.
Nope.
Oh, PS5.
Nope.
No.
PS5's way lower right now because it's at 38.
Right. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm thinking
still trying to make
it's
its
outpacing,
way.
But it's not. Oh, PS2.
PS2 coming in at number one.
And then the Wii.
No. So PS2 is at 155 million. DS, 154 million,
really?
Then Switch at 125.
Yeah.
And then you go down to Game Boy, then PS4, then PlayStation, then Wii.
Yeah.
So Wii's at 101 million. So
revolution.
The revolution, never forget. But the Switch is currently about 25 million above the Wii. Just for some context there of like how wild it was when the Wii like was first popping off and how it felt like it changed games forever, which it did
broke
in so
TVs
many ways. Yeah, exactly.
Across the land.
I still think that they're gonna, I mean, even if they hit the 15 million that they're talking about here, right? That's getting it still closer, but not quite beating the DS. But I think that there could be enough juice in the tank to get it across the it could do it. It could go all the way.
It could. I mean, it's just wild to see the longevity and that, like, you know, 15 million is still nothing to be sniffed at.
Oh my, no, that's, I mean, 15 million is, let me see where we go with this. I mean, 15 million is way more than the Vita.
Oh.
The entire life. It's more than the Wii U. And that you want to hear something that's wild. This is just the estimated last numbers. 15 million is not far off from the Xbox Series X and S reportedly here at 18.5 million.
Where's PS5?
Still? But I don't think we've had updates on that. Oh, PS5? No, is that...
40 million?
Hold on. Yes, 38. 38.4. So
maybe I'll pivot and become a numbers guy.
Yeah. Dirk Kendall era. But anyways, that's the hardware side of stuff. Yeah. But then Nintendo, during the physical things, always does their software as well. One of the rare times they actually kind of give the updates on their games here, which is unique to them in the way that NPD doesn't cover the digital side, which is like such a big part of the Nintendo sales structure. So unexpectedly, the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is still number one. Yeah. An additional 1.79 million units sold, bringing it to almost 54 million copies sold.
And then how many on the Wii U?
I don't know. It was, well, let me see. I should remember this. Mario Kart Wii U
Jeff
sales.
Rub in the chat. Tell him, mate.
8.46 million. So, yeah, we're talking about 60 million plus sold of Mario Kart 8 in some way, shape, or form. Coming in number two, not that big of a bump, just 0.62 million is Animal Crossing's New Horizon. Now
2020,
number two.
What a time.
I know, but the number two best-selling Switch game, outselling Super Smash Brothers at 31 million and Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild at 29.81 million. Yeah. An additional 8.1 million added, and that's wild. For a
that's
game
people
that,
kidding themselves that they can finish Breath of the Wild before.
Like, oh, you know what? I'm late to this, but I love that, though, because it's like that game is still kicking, like kicking enough that it can like be rising the ranks up in the top 10 here. And then we get Pokemon Sword and Shield at 25.8, Mario Odyssey at 25.7, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet getting an additional 1.5 million, so up to 22.1 million. And then Super Mario Party at almost at 19, New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe at 15.4, which is the wild one.
That's incredible.
When you think of that, the 2D Mario game from 2012, I think, being ported, and it's just like, oh yeah, 15 million sales.
Top 10, maybe.
That's the power. And people always call me out in the comments. They're like, 2D Mario, no one cares. Yes, they do. They care so freaking much, man. And then Ring Fit Adventure.
Ring Fit Adventure
still
is
number
great.
10.
That buff dragon guy, he's my nemesis.
So this is the first time that Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee has been bumped from the top 10. So that's an interesting thing there. And then they weren't even giving numbers for Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. So I didn't like those games, and a lot of people as well didn't like those games. So
I'm not a Pokemon guy.
I am so hard. So such a Pokemon guy. Lucid Dream writes in and says, one thing I took away from the Nintendo financials, despite an overall decline in hardware, there was a 58.8% increase in Switch OLED sales. This reinforces the idea that consumers are hungry for new hardware, even though Nintendo said we wouldn't see anything this fiscal year. They're also expecting a further decline. What would it take for Nintendo to announce a Switch successor? Their next console's probably been in development for years. What do you think they're waiting for?
Zelda to get out the door.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah, please tell your friends about this console and this game. And that's the swan song. And then they will announce.
Yeah. That sounds very likely. And like there is still some gas in the tank, potentially. Like, we know we're getting the Pokemon Scarlet and Violet DLC packs, but like that's not gonna move the needle like that big in terms of like new people popping in.
Did Pikmin come out?
No, Pikmin 4 still coming out in, I want to say, June, like you said. Correct me if I'm wrong. See you in the chat there. But yeah, Pikmin 4 is June or July. And then after that, I mean, we just had Advance Wars, right?
Yep.
And Zelda, obviously, is later in the week. Besides that, it's like we don't really have any major games. Metroid Prime 4 is the one unreleased big game that is supposedly coming to Switch. But at this point, it's like maybe that's not the case, you know? Yeah. I still think that no matter what the next Switch hardware is, it's going to be more integrated with the Switch than we've ever previously seen consoles be connected. I mean, even I guess maybe Xbox Series is probably the
but I mean, for Nintendo, they love cutting stuff off on their old generations. So I would love to see that more of an ecosystem. Rather than, okay, well, I have this game and I can only play it on my Nintendo Switch, or I have this game and I can only play it on my Switch 2.
Yeah.
Couldn't think of a cool, fun name. Not as inventive as Nintendo.
Switch U. God. Well, I wonder what it's going to be. And that's the thing. I feel like Switch will still be in the title. I just don't know. I mean, I hope it's not new Nintendo Switch, because they would do that. But
oh, that's some Series X, Series S yeah. stuff. No, they can't do that.
The thing with Nintendo is you can never predict it.
Well, they did Wii U, didn't they?
So. They'll do like Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Nintendo 64. Fuck it. You know, they go crazy over there.
Oh, but everyone in chat saying Super Switch.
Yeah. Super Switch, I feel like, is a little too like for us, like for old people. You know what I mean?
The Super Switch. Also, an unfortunate acronym. Can't call it the SS.
Yeah. We can't do that. We have to figure it out. But yeah, I feel like with the Nintendo's not going to want to get away from the amount of hardware sales it has out there with Switch. When you look at these software sales, it's like, yeah, they want to stay tied to that. And when Phil Spencer was on XCast last week, he was talking about how he feels that losing the Xbox One era was like the worst era to lose the generation because of the fact that was the shifting the tide to turn to the digital libraries where starting from the ground up of like getting these games that are under your account and all of that. And PlayStation just got such a leg up that when people already had that, of course they're going to want to keep it going forward. Mm-hmm. I feel like Nintendo, because of the failure of the Wii U, had this hard reset in so many ways where now the Switch is the beginning of that digital library and they have such a head start there that like now that they have that, like I don't think that they're going to get away from that.
They can't lose this momentum. I think, you know, Nintendo definitely still has a ways to go, but they've made such great ground over the last few years and seen enormous success. And so I'm excited for the future of Nintendo. And I say that as someone who didn't really grow up with Nintendo, only really, you know, had a Game Boy Color and whatever, but then, you know, kind of missed out on a lot of the Nintendo generations and then got my Switch. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is that joy people have been talking about all this time, huh? But no.
Yeah, well, I love Nintendo and I'm very excited for some new hardware because this thing is... not up to snuff.
No, I have a launch Switch.
Oh, no. Oh,
and
no.
And that baby's chugging along.
Yeah.
It just stays docked now.
Story number two. Starfield gets an M rating for its violence, sex, drugs, and swearing. This comes from Michael McWhorter at Polygon. The Entertainment Software Ratings Board has passed judgment on Starfield. And like Bethesda Game Studios' other games, Fallout 4, Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim, the spacefaring role-playing game will be an M for mature rated game. Expect violence, foul language, sex, and drug use in Starfield when the game launches later this summer. When it comes to violence, players will use futuristic guns, lasers, axes, and explosives to kill enemies. Combat is fast-paced with frequent gunfire, cries of pain, and explosions. Attacks on some enemies can result in blood splatter effects. Several environments depict blood stains on the ground around corpses. There's something about this that's really funny to me.
Yeah, like, it's so just
surgical.
Yeah, it's just like, very just like, you know, 10,000 foot look at this. It's very fun.
While the violence sounds graphic, the sex in Starfield sounds pretty tame. The game's rating says players can expect some suggestive material in the dialogue and after sharing a bed with characters. Okay. The best of those suggestive lines, quote, "I'm all for getting a little wild, but next time, let's try it without the jetpacks." He's right behind me, isn't he? Finally, the rating also reminds us that Starfield will let you get high on that primo stuff. Space fish juice. Starfield's drug of choice is called Aurora, and as noted by Bethesda back in 2021, players will get some when they visit a destination called Neon, a pleasure city, built on a massive fishing facility. That facility processes a breed of psychotropic fish that creates the naturally occurring drug, and according to the ESRB, players can even work there at some point in the game.
Okay.
Get to be a little drug dealer, a little fish drug dealer.
There is a lot to unpack from this.
Yeah, you're going to take a little trip to Pleasure City?
Pleasure City. I'm going to go to Neon. I'm all... Right, okay. And I say this is like the biggest Mass Effect 2 defender in the world. Some of those lines are cheesy.
Oh, yeah.
But...
Part of the fun.
You know, Garrus Vakarian. Well, actually, Garrus is in ESO now. And I was like, oh, if you're going to make me play Elder Scrolls Online, make my companion Garrus Vakarian. Anyway, so that's downloading. But he never said anything as bad as "I'm all for getting a little wild, but let's try it without the jetpacks." Someone wrote that line.
Yeah, and you know it
maybe
sucks.
In context.
It sucks.
Maybe
out of context. It's so mean. It's so mean. Like I feel like fucking ESRB's out here, just like, yo, let's like make them look so lame right now.
Someone at the ESRB is just like, another game, is it? All right.
Sex is tame, but they got some lines here. Yeah, I don't think that that is a worry of, like, any indication of, like, the quality of the writing of the game. I think it's just an unfortunate pull quote here that's funny. But an M-rated rating for this, I'm not surprised at all, right?
No, I'm glad there's an M rating. Because I, you know, when I play an RPG, I love just getting lost in it. And I think sometimes when games hold back a little bit, maybe for rating, maybe for, you know, artistic vision or whatever, I'm just like, I kind of wish that was a little bit grittier. Mm-hmm. That's just because I'm a weird person who loves really gritty, dark stuff. Yeah, I'm reading a really weird book at the moment that I was talking to Joey about, and she was like, everything all right. But, so I'm really glad it's M-rating, because I think that kind of lends itself to the experience a little bit.
Yeah. Dan Golden Spider B writes in and says, am I the only person that would be fully happy and satisfied if Starfield is just another Bethesda RPG, but in space? Everyone seems to be pushing and thinking that this needs to be a genre/decade-defining game, but I just want a good time in a sci-fi open-world RPG.
Me too. I want bugs galore. I want wonky kind of AI and stuff. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm not close-minded or just not creative enough. It's like, I don't see how you could redefine. Maybe they can. And like, but I'm kind of happy if they're not. But maybe I'm just not setting that expectation for myself. So when I play it and it's like, oh my God, this is the best game since Skyrim. But I'm happy if it's not.
Yeah. It's complicated because I feel like you're not the only person, Dan. Like, I feel like there's most people, probably the healthiest expectation for the game is that it's going to be like the other things from them, just in space.
I think if we've learned anything over the past few years of big games coming out that we're all incredibly excited for.
Yeah.
Manage those expectations. Remember Cyberpunk? Everyone was like, at launch at least, everyone was like, Cyberpunk is going to change everything. Like, the big RPG that's going to change everything. And then it was just like, oh, didn't launch in the state that we expected it to. But then Redemption Story, it fixed itself, but we've had that over and over again, and mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I just think that there's layers to it in the sense that, like, at the end of the day, there's a lot of people that are just expecting that. They're probably going to get that, and that's great. But there is another side to it where, because we are in the industry, because we are on a show talking about video games and talking about the business of it all and, like, how the whole ecosystem works, that's why there's all these extra pressures, is because there is this conversation around different developers and what the expectations are contextually based on their previous projects. And you look at Bethesda, and right now we're kind of looking at them as like, y'all need a win. It's been a while,
yeah.
And y'all are known for some of the biggest, best games ever, some of the most like industry-defining games with things like Skyrim and some of the Fallouts. And then you had Fallout 76 as the last major release title. So now it's kind of like all eyes are on you to be like, no, prove you're back on course or whatever. And like, do they need to do that? Or can you just look at every game as its own thing? I think both are true. And I think that that's kind of like where it all is, where it doesn't necessarily need to fall into like console war stuff. It's even just like a war with their own library, like looking at what Xbox is trying to put out, specifically after partnering with Bethesda, this being the first Xbox exclusive Bethesda title. Like, there's a lot.
Redfall.
Bethesda Softworks title.
Okay.
That means so much, right? And I think because of Redfall coming out, where there was expectations from Arcane and then Halo and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, I think that's why everybody's kind of pushing that this needs to be bigger than it possibly even can be.
Yeah.
It's a monster to itself. And is that right? Fair? I don't know, but it's reality.
And it's also, they announced it so long ago that can't help but get swept up in those expectations. You know, every little crumb of information, every leaked screenshot, people have just been picking over and poring over for years at this point. And so there's obviously going to be an element of hype in it.
And that's due to placing, right? That's due to them telling us years ago, hey, this is alongside Elder Scrolls 6.
Yeah.
Like, this is the big one, you know, like, this matters. And like, when they tell us, hey, in the same way you guys love that, you're going to love this. That's where this like starts snowballing. And then unfortunately there's things out of their control, which is all the games releasing around them. And I feel like that's all kind of just created this unfortunate perfect storm of expectations that yet another insurmountable task is put on the shoulders of Xbox Game Studios developer to meet expectations that, like, in all honesty, I don't think are feasible. But having said all that, I don't expect this game to be bad by any means. I think that the millions and millions of Dan Golden Spider bees out there are going to have a great time with this game, no matter what state it launches in, I expect, at least. Remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to get this show ad-free, but for everyone else, look how cool I look. Oh, Kevin, you're leaving me hanging way too long for that segue. Shout out to Shady Rays for sponsoring this episode. Do you want to look as cool as I look? Yes, you do, and you can. You can take on the sun with gear built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered for the warm weather ahead with premium polarized shades at an unbeatable price. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that offers a world-class product that's just as good as any expensive pair that I've ever worn in my life. Every pair of sunglasses is backed by lost and broken replacements. If you lose or break your pair, even on day one, they told us they will send you a brand new pair, no questions asked. You can wear your Shady Rays with confidence because they have your back long after you purchase. Exclusively for you listeners, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the season. You can go to shadyrays.com and use the code kindoffunny. You can get 50% off 2+ pairs of polarized sunglasses. You can try for yourself the shades that are rated 5 stars by over 250,000 people. Promo code kindoffunny at shadyrays.com.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Barrett tells me that doesn't happen.
Going in, I had the perfect segue. Kevin once again has to go running back in. Going out, he's like, coming back in 5, 4, boom, we're back.
I've talked to him about it. He says that doesn't happen with him, but that clearly, there was 2 seconds left on the indicator.
I love it here, everybody. Kevin's feeling giggly. What a great day. Story number 3, Horizon Forbidden West has become one of PS5's best-selling games. This is great news. This comes from Liam Croft at Push Square. As part of a celebratory PlayStation blog post all about the 20th anniversary of Guerrilla Games, the first-party team has announced that Horizon Forbidden West has sold 8.4 million units as of April 16, 2023. This is purely counting all PS5, PS4 sales and does not factor in any downloads from PS Plus Extra. That's some good info to have.
Yeah.
In total, with the original Horizon Zero Dawn and also Horizon Call of the Mountain included, the Horizon series has now sold 32.7 million copies, including PS Plus and the Play at Home redemptions. The sales milestone makes Horizon Forbidden West one of PS5's best-selling games, competing in the upper echelons with the likes of God of War Ragnarok and Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales. All told, it's a milestone we never imagined possible 20 years ago when we first started making games. This is coming from studio director Jan Bart Van Beek. The PS5 version has since been updated with a significant expansion in Burning Shores, so sales of the base game should receive a boost in the near future. Beek continues, this reception has been staggering, and we're grateful to the community for the continued love and support of the franchise. We Guerrillas feel lucky to witness that support every day. We share community fan art and the cosplay. I want you all to know we're completely blown away by your enthusiasm. He then teases the third installment. Her latest mission takes her to the ruins of Los Angeles and Horizon Forbidden West, Burning Shores. And we can't wait for you to find out where she'll go next.
Which American city is she gonna go to next? Crazy gal.
What do you think about this?
I'm not the biggest fan of Horizon.
I am not either.
Okay, good.
I'm not either. But I am a fan of a new IP
coming out
and working and hitting like this.
Yeah.
Not just the sequel selling so well, but the franchise overall. Like another big hit that didn't exist, you know, a decade ago.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. And I'm glad that, you know, because obviously we kind of PlayStation... icons kind of go in phases. You know, there was the Crash years for a while, and then there's obviously Nathan Drake and Sweet Boy Crash. And now it's kind of nice that Aloy's up there too. Like I love seeing kind of all the representation is different from, and I just never gel with the game though. That's
I don't
thing.
Either.
I wish I liked Horizon more than I did.
And it's weird too because like visually it is
stunning.
It is stunning, and it's the most me thing ever. Like there's no aesthetic I like more than neon jungle. And it's just like, I feel like that, like, it's such a beautiful game. I was watching Greg play Burning Shores a little bit yesterday, and I'm just like, man, like, I didn't love Forbidden West. Am I going to get back into this, though? But going off of that, like, I don't want to be negative, because this is a win.
Yeah.
This is such a big deal here for the fans of the game and for Guerrilla specifically to have such a turnaround from where they were to this, like, such a different genre shift. Again, proof that it can work. Like, we've seen, like, recently we were talking about Redfall with Arcane and, like, trying something different, not quite hitting the mark. But here it's, like, Horizon, a very different game than the previous game. So that working, I think, is great for them. And I am interested in this line where he's talking about the PS5 version's been updated with a significant expansion with Burning Shores. So sales of the base game should receive a boost in the near future. We don't often hear about the relationship between DLC and base game sales.
Mm.
And so I'd be interested in like what that actually can result in. Like I'm sure there is a bump, but I wonder how significant that is around their strategies of thinking of DLC as kind of a way to get more money out of the people that already played versus trying to get new people in and using it as like a second marketing attempt at the base game.
Yeah, because it's a little more, with appealing to the people who already own the game, that's easy because you've basically already done the hard work. They've played it, they know the story, but then bringing out an expansion or a piece of DLC, it's a bigger ask. So I would wonder what that conversion looks like. One thing I would say that this doesn't count for is, does it account for bundles? Because PS5 was bundled with Horizon, right?
With Forbidden West?
With the new one.
Yeah, was it?
Was there a bundle?
I don't know, but yeah, it probably would count. Like they count bundle sales for
it. Which is also interesting because people just, buy the console and then
especially there was such a swell of PS5 being bought around that time.
And it does count.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, that makes sense then. It's when it comes to where Horizon is right now, this DLC Burning Shores coming out, like even let's say you liked Burning Shores, like if you liked Forbidden West, would you play Burning Shores? Would you be excited to play Burning Shores? Or would you be like, if I have time, I'm going to?
So the thing is that I love any excuse to kind of get back to a world that I love. And so every time there's like a big meaty DLC for a game I love, I would absolutely get back in. I also think, compared to the Xbox 360 PS3 days, it felt like maybe I'm kind of going from, Mass Effect and whatever, and the BioWare DLCs where those felt important and they felt like real moments that you would look forward to. And I feel like we don't really get big DLCs like that. And so I think anytime that a studio does do that and revisits a game and adds more to it, adds more context, adds more story, adds more gameplay, I love that. And so I think right now though, the timing of this launch tricky because inadvertently they've put themselves up against Zelda again.
I know.
Like
once again. Damn you, Nintendo.
Remember what happened the last time.
Zelda, then Elden Ring. Just like poor Aloy, man.
But so I hope that obviously it'll be one of those things that maybe it goes on PS Plus or maybe they'll kind of do a bundle or something again over the summer where things are a little bit quieter because I wouldn't want something like Burning Shores to be drowned out, because it's going to be meaningful to so many people who really enjoyed that game.
Yeah. I do think something should be said about the fact that despite Zelda, despite Elden Ring, we're still talking about
these numbers,
right? So it's like, I do think that when we talk about different games, the comparisons, we go back to like the failure of Titanfall 2 because it was like crushed against its own competition. Like it was like such a sad thing. It's like there can be, with the right support and pushes, whether it's bundling for console sales or just a continuous investment in the IP itself, like you can come out the other side on that like victorious. And with Apex on the Titanfall side, it's like I do wonder if EA can like keep making a couple right decisions, if we can get back to it and get a Titanfall 3 out of it. But
open dream.
Yeah.
But no, I think as well, the narrative is always that Horizon gets the short shrift because they were up against Zelda, they were up against Elden Ring. But them announcing these numbers as part of the 20th, it's like know. It's like this franchise is doing great. We know there are multiple projects on the horizon.
Hey.
And so it's great to see. Great to see because they, you know, new IP is relatively few and far between.
Especially that big, yeah. You know, like a swing that ridiculously yep. big. And then, but then you look at Ghost of Tsushima as well, right? Like yeah. it's in a world where here we are in May 2023, and this has been one of my favorite years in video game history so far.
Oh, this year is ridiculous.
And it seems like it's only going to continue that way. But so many of those have been remakes or remasters to some extent with Metroid Prime, Dead Space, Resident Evil 4. But that being intermixed with the hi-fi rushes, I enjoy that we can get these new IP, and then we can get the sequel. And I know God of War, not a new IP, right? Mm-hmm. But it is a essentially rebooted IP. It gets a sequel. Then we get the licensed things with Spider-Man going to Insomniac, and then it turns into a franchise. But Horizon being a, from the ground up, brand new thing that is now a pillar, and you got to imagine Ghost is similarly going to see that type of success when it gets a sequel. It's a great time for PlayStation Studios, I'll tell you that.
Yep, 100%.
Story number four, Street Fighter VI open beta announced just a few weeks before release. This comes from George Yang at IGN. Capcom announced that it will be hosting an open beta for Street Fighter VI from May 19th to May 21st. It will contain the same content as the closed beta from December 2022, and the released version will be updated with further character balances. Those who want to participate in the open beta will need to register a Capcom ID and link their desired platform as PC, PS5, and Xbox Series X and S are included. The available playable characters are Luke, Jamie, Ryu, Chun-Li, Guile, Kimberly, Juri, and Ken. The available stages include Metro City Downtown, Genbu Temple, Carrier Byron Taylor, Tianheng Yuan, Macho Ring, and Training Room. Get hyped. There are also a variety of different modes to play online with, such as ranked matches, casual matches, open tournaments, and more. Additionally, cross-play functionality will let players from separate platforms enjoy the game with each other. This is kind of wild. May 19th, 21st, people will be able to play that game, so just 10 days from now. But then the game comes out.
June 6th or 2nd?
That sounds right.
Early, first
June 2nd. June 2nd. So yeah, we are very close to this game.
Awesome.
Are you a Street Fighter, Lucy? Are you a fighting game person?
No, I am not, but I'm friends with Tam. So genuinely, when we went to Summer Game Fest last year, we had an appointment to go see it. And they looked at me and they went, oh, you're a video producer. Do you want to capture gameplay? No, thank
Tam.
You. Tam. Tam, please take my slot. I think he ended up getting like a double slot and ended up, because he's obviously great at them. Everyone I've spoken to who enjoys fighting games is really, really digging Street Fighter VI. And I'm super glad to see it. Like, I think, I wish I had, first of all, the cartilage the tendons to be able to play a fighting game, but sadly I don't. It looks really cool. But it's meant to be a little bit more approachable newcomers.
Yeah,
so approachable. Maybe.
Oh yeah, maybe.
Are you a street? Are you?
I enjoy fighting games a lot. I would not say I'm a fighting game person. Yeah. I'm definitely not good at them, but I play them enough. I play through the stories and like casually enough that like I had like Chun-Li's my main, I would say, in Street Fighter.
Love her.
You know what I mean? Like that's the level that I'm at with it. But I have a ton of fun. I always play through like the Street Fighter specifically. I would say is the one that I'm traditional fighting game that I'm most attuned to. But really excited for six. I'm really excited mainly, we've been talking about this a lot, that fighting games are kind of having this like major moment right now.
This year.
Yeah, it kicks it
what
off.
A ridiculous year.
Street Fighter VI being kind of the first major one, but then going down, we get Tekken, we're going to get Mortal Kombat, and then Project L. And with Evo being as exciting as it is, like with esports in general kind of exploding almost like in tandem alongside the industry we talk about with video games over the last couple of years, and like we've kind of seen esports kind of rise and like I don't want to say fall, but kind of explode at the top. And right now it's kind of all just
they're
like
in a weird place right now.
But it got so big, and like that's a whole side of the industry that we just don't even, I don't know how much you know, but like we just don't talk about. We just don't know. It's like it's might as well just be a completely different thing. But there's something about Evo and like the fighting game community that I feel for some reason it's in the Venn diagram of esports and traditional games coverage. And I think maybe it just goes back to back in the day, traditional games coverage did cover arcades, and it covered like Street Fighter is kind of endemic to that experience, where a lot of the MOBAs and the more PC sided things aren't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's kind of funny. A lot of people who worked in fighting games and in the fighting game community, you know, like we have a couple video producers who came up. They worked on Evo. I know Eric Williams from the God of War team is massive in the fighting game community, and that's like kind of where he grew up and cut his teeth. And so I'm sad. It's like genuinely one of those things that I wish I could get into, but I'm way past it. And you know, there's too much lore and history and games that I've missed out on. Wrestling. Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah.
Like if I had all the time in the world, I would get into, but I sadly don't.
Yeah. For me, I think there's something, fighting games and racing games, I love playing them, but like there's a certain level of skill that I'm like, I just can't pass it.
Oh yeah, that's
like,
my ceiling.
I'm just like, this mechanic doesn't make sense in my mind. It doesn't click. Okay, that's fine. But I still have fun with it. But I think that there's something about fighting games that, In the same way that like chess is just such a smart game and it works. Like there are rules to it that once you learn, it kind of like advances you and you're a different level of a human being. I think fighting games are the same thing.
100%.
Where it's so tit for tat, and when they're well balanced, there's like nothing quite like those mechanics and how they make you the hand-eye coordination and all that stuff work. It's kind of like video game. It's gameplay at its core, right? And I think that's why a lot of game designers love fighting games so much, because like that they can take that gameplay and like see what works there and then apply it to story or characters or whatever the genre and vision they have.
Because I think that's how I would need to reprogram myself to play a fighting game. Because when I was playing Tekken 4 growing up with my friend Beth, you know, we would just button mash. We want to get to the next cutscene. We weren't learning it properly. We weren't memorizing combos. We were just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. And I think I would massively need to just unlearn how everything I thought I knew about fighting games to be able to play them properly at the level at which they are. They deserve to be.
Yeah. But I do think that with the run of the games coming out, and especially how the release schedule seems paced right now, if things go to plan. Like, I think that the fighting game community has the potential to thrive in a way that it never quite has in a mainstream way. Yeah. And with PlayStation investing and buying Evo and running it, there's a lot of question marks there. I'm sure there's a lot of bad that's going to come with that. But I think potentially that could turn it into what I'm saying of, like, the difference between traditional esports and then the more like, hey, this is something that and then the other thing, like, on top of fighting games being such a gameplay focused genre, they're also very simple for outsiders and audience to watch and understand what's going on. Watching Overwatch or watching Hearthstone or watching Dota or any of that stuff, if you don't know the rules, you're going to be lost. Watching a fighting game, there's two health bars that are going down. And, like, you might not know the matchups.
No camera cuts.
Exactly. It's just, like, you can see it. And, like, even if you don't play video games, one person saying, oh, whoever loses that color first wins, you're like, I can wrap my head around that. So I feel like that all just adds up to, like, a lot of easy wins that need to then be backed up with great games that then need to be backed up with great communities. And I feel like there's this perfect storm happening right now that could happen.
Trust.
Yeah.
Yep.
There we go. But finding out if video games are going to be taken over by the fighting game genre is so far away, Lucy. If I want to know what's coming to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah! Thank you, Kevin. Out today. We have Ys 9, Monstrum Nox on PlayStation 5. Mid-Autumn, Mid-Autumn. It was a lot of letters next to each other.
I was amazed you got that
word.
First one. I was like, I have no idea.
Just so y'all know, it's Mid-Autumn all together, which if it said mid and then autumn, I would have got. But all together, that was a lot. Panorama on PC. Dokopon Kingdom Connect on Switch. Stellaris Galactic Paragons on PC, and Peridot on iOS and Android. Peridot is the Niantic game that is their own game. It's the new Pokemon Go type thing, but like, and it's essentially their Pokemon ripoff. So it's like the 90s all over again of everyone trying to do their own thing. But they also kind of invented this whole.
Did.
What do you call it? Social.
The metaverse.
I mean, yo, it is the metaverse in a way. Iteration, but yeah. Did you ever get into any of those types of games?
I mean, you could not be around in 2016 without getting into Pokemon Go. So 2016, and that, you know, I remember we worked right next to a Pokestop and a gym. So the GameSpot office was a hubbub. And I remember one time, was it a Dratini or something spawned in the office and we just lost it. And then I fell off because I don't walk a lot. I wasn't doing all the walking stuff, so I didn't hatch anything. Nothing was very good in my collection. Like, I didn't have shiny. They didn't have shinies back then.
Not back then, no.
But no, I didn't have, like, I couldn't be bothered. And then they kept adding more and more Pokemon. And I was like, well, this is beyond the 151. But I do occasionally, because I'm obviously friends with Andrew Goldfarb.
Of course.
Who's still playing, Callie plays. I download it every so often occasionally, just to kind of have a look. But I did, I think I got back in when they had the whole Gengar thing from a while ago.
My boy Gengar, we got to get in here, yeah.
Are you still playing?
So I, like everyone else, played in 2016. And Greg's old house, the original spare bedroom, did not have Pokestops around it. It did not have any of those things. So it made it, like, just a little too inconvenient to really keep up with it. So I fell off hardcore really early on and didn't even touch it. And then after I fell in love with Scarlet and Violet in November, I've played every single day.
Wow.
I am, like, I'm checking Pokemon Go multiple times a day now. I have officially caught over half of them, all of them.
Wow.
In the game. And I'm going for them all. I'm catching them all, baby.
Tim, you remember the one place around the first studio that did have them?
Yeah.
That one bar that had that sign that said, no Pokemon here?
Yeah.
Leave
there was this
alone,
bar
no
that was like, what was it called? Yellow Nellies? No. Oh, Dirty Nellies.
Wait, around 9th?
No. Older, around 25th. It was called Dirty Nellies, and it was this, like, old Irish bar.
Oh, God.
And they had the most, like, it was normal. Like, what color is an Irish bar?
Green?
Yeah.
Well, like green, like that, accoutrement.
Exactly, right? This was not, or it was, and then they decided to paint over it. And they were like, well, we're in San Francisco, so we're going to do Warriors colors, which were, you know, that, like, bright royal blue, and then, like,
yellow?
Obnoxiously loud yellow. And so it was all just royal blue, and then they painted all the trimmings yellow. It might be the ugliest building I have ever seen in my life.
Is it still there?
Oh, yeah, it's still there.
Fantastic.
It's still, I'll try to see if I can get a picture, but thank you.
Oh,
Kevin.
My God.
Thank you. Yeah, it is ugly. But they had a sign in front that says, no Pokemon here.
And it was a Pokemon.
And it was a stop. Yeah.
Wow.
That often spawned Pokemon.
God.
Man, so it was one of those places that has, like, a sign that says, like new faces are always friends or something. You know? And, like, you'd walk in and be like, that is not the vibe.
Yeah.
That is not the vibe.
Definitely not. Me and Greg had lunch with Roger Craig Smith, the voice of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Lovely.
At Dirty Nelly's one.
There.
But anyways, Pokemon Go forever.
What a time.
May it rain, I guess. I don't know. Actually, no, it's a really bad time right now. I came in at, like, apparently the worst time ever. Goldfarb was trying to tell me, like, everything, like, since pandemic, like, Pokemon Go is, like, the one thing that got better. And then
they changed it so you don't have to go play.
Yeah, you don't actually need to go. It's just Pokemon. It's like the go out of it. But then apparently they took out the remote raid passes or whatever. Like, not took out, but they, like, bumped up how much it costs. It's a whole thing in the community. Don't follow the Reddit. New dates for you. Super Bunny Man hops into 1.0 on May 16th.
Nice.
Gimmick special. Do you know what Super Bunny Man is? Me neither.
I just like the hops.
There's a YouTuber named Super.
There's a Super Bunny Hop.
Super Bunny Hop.
Yeah.
Yes, and I love him.
Yeah, I love him.
His Metal Gear Solid retrospectives
are
fantastic. Yeah. Gimmick Special Edition launches July 6th on PS4, Switch, and PC. FIFA 23 joins EA Play and Xbox Game Pass on May 16th. Deals of the day for you: Steam World Dig 2 is $6 on Xbox. And let's do a little reader mail for you here. New John Plus writes in and says, hey, KF crew, what's a game you find yourself returning to just to play it, enjoy gaming, and relax? My most recent game like this was Breath of the Wild. I still return to it in between games when I'm resting, when I don't know what to play, or when I just want to feel the thrill of climbing a tall mountain and gliding off of it. Before Breath of the Wild, it was Skyrim. Before Skyrim, it was the original Pokemon. Honestly, it's still the original Pokemon. With Tears of the Kingdom dropping this week, I'm already anticipating that it might replace Breath of the Wild for me in this way. Thanks for answering. Here's hoping Tears of the Kingdom convinces Greg that Kinda Funny actually does need a Nintendo show.
Peggle.
Oh, that is such a good answer.
Peggle.
Yeah.
Although, it's not available on, this is my cross to bear, it's not available on phones anymore. They're trying to make you play that god-awful Peggle Blast.
Now, Lucy, what if I told you that my answer is Peggle Blast? I love Peggle Blast, and it is the most offensive thing in the world with the monetization and all that stuff, but it is the superior Peggle because it's vertical. So you're playing, whereas the rest of the Peggle 1, Peggle 2, all that stuff, you don't get as much fun time for the ball to drop, you know? The vertical designs for Peggle is how the game should be played. And they just ruined it. But Peggle Blast is the best game of all time held back by bullshit monetization.
Okay, well.
I've beaten Peggle Blast to 100% like 5 times.
I didn't even know that was possible because I would get caught by the monetization.
There's ways to cheese it, and then my game's just broken. At this point, I don't know what happened, but I've played it so much and I've broken it so much that it just lets me play unlimited.
Oh my God.
So yeah, there's ways around this.
See, I love Peggle 1 and 2, but I'm missing it being on my phone. Have you tried Round God?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love it. Too much stuff.
Scratches the itch.
Scratches the niche, but maybe a bit too hard. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I just want some fun here. I want a single screen by screen challenge.
Yeah.
Maybe get some 3 stars, you know?
Maybe I'll go back and try it again.
Yeah,
maybe.
Peggle
is the best relaxing game because it is drop in, drop out, satisfaction of hitting the pins, and
then the music plays. You're like, oh my God, it feels so good. Bless you. My other two games would be Tony Hawk's Pro Skater Remake 1 and 2, and Spider-Man or Miles Morales. Any of those. Swing and feels so good.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what mine be. Oh, Dishonored 1 and 2. Hell yeah! Just the way that it feels. I don't know. It's just something.
Oh, yeah, it feels good. It's a big, big Bear Courtney game right there. And then the other ones for me, all the old school things, like Pokemon's an easy answer. But if I have time and I'm just chilling, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to load up Super Mario Brothers 1 and just beat it. Like, just real quick, 10 minutes in and out. And Star Fox 64 is a game that I'm like, do I have an hour? Fuck it. I'm doing it.
I have an hour. I'll make an hour for this.
What do we got going on? Who we have over there? Is that Andy? That is Andy. Andy's going to be joining us. I'm really excited for that. For
our beautiful... Andy decided to actually be here while I'm here for a change.
Yes. We're going to answer all your super chats right after this. Real quick, let me tell you, this week's hosts are tomorrow, Blessing and Greg, Thursday, Blessing and me, and Friday, me and Blessing. It's going to be a great week if you're a fan of Blessing. After this, we're about to do the little super chat thing with you. Please super chat away, asking any questions you have about the stories we talked about today, video games in general, or anything you have for the amazing Lucy James. This has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, where we run you through the video game news that you need to know. Until next time, Game Daily.